My name is Amy Coonan, and I'm your host for The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share advice for techies, for earth lovers, and for penny pinchers. As much as I love the sound of my own voice, this broadcast is going to rely heavily on guests who are subject matter experts on everything, ranging from how to get your small business up and running, interviews with some of the brains behind your favorite apps, and even how to remove garbage from outer space. You never know who's going to pop up and join me next in studio, so make sure to subscribe to The Town Hall on iTunes to get our episodes downloaded directly. And if your boss is making you work through lunch or your commute is just too short and you miss something awesome, don't worry, we've got your back. You can check out our blog for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. All right, everyone. So our guest today is Ryan Watson from Zero. And I'll let Ryan explain a little bit more about Zero and what exactly it is that he does. But we're super lucky to have Ryan joining us via Skype all the way from the tropical island of Dayton, Ohio. Is that right?
Pretty close. Northern Cincinnati. Yep.
Oh, well, your phone came up as Dayton, so we're going to go with Dayton.
No, I know. Well, I'm originally from Dayton, Ohio, and I'm originally from Dayton, Ohio, so no.
Okay, so I'm not wrong, and the joke worked. The joke landed.
Yeah, I think it landed. Yeah, totally landed.
All right, so Ryan, why don't we start by giving our listeners kind of an introduction, maybe a little bit about you, and a little bit of explanation about your role, as well as kind of a little bit about Zero, too.
Yeah, totally. So my name is Ryan Watson Wright. I'm a co-founder and a partner in a Columbus, Ohio-based accounting practice called Upsourced Accounting. We perform outsourced accounting and management advisory for small businesses in a couple of verticals, one of which is B2B software startups, and another are sort of seven-figure digital agencies. We've been using as a platform to provide those services a software called Zero for the past 6 or 7 years. And so in addition to running this practice, I'm also a brand ambassador for Zero, which really just means I travel around throughout the Midwest talking to accounting firms and businesses about the cloud, technology, and accounting in general, and specifically for accounting firms, how they can leverage technology to deliver more real-time advisory services for their small business clients. And so Zero is a small business accounting platform. It's 100% cloud-based. It's sort of a competitor to the incumbent in the U.S., QuickBooks and QuickBooks Online. But Zero is sort of a 100% cloud-based, born in the cloud, alternative to QuickBooks.
So, you know, I think that there's a lot of similarities between Zero and Rubicon. We're both kind of disrupting old industries. You know, like back in the days, bookkeeping was literal, like bookkeeping. And now people are able to do this online, and it's a real, you know, modern spin on a lot of that stuff. And on the Rubicon side, obviously, we're trying to disrupt the waste industry, but a big part in our business is small businesses. So I really wanted to bring you on today to kind of talk either as Ryan or as a small business owner and kind of see, and I'll ask you a couple questions and we can see a couple different answers. We have a lot of small business customers. As you know, our podcasts are also going to live on our marketplace, which is going to be a resource for a lot of our small business owners. So we really just want to kind of make sure that we're thought leaders and giving like the best advice. So let's start off really easy.
Yeah.
What is the best advice that you could give for someone who is about to start a small business?
Yeah, that's a good question. Boy, it's actually kind of a loaded, sort of difficult to answer question. But honestly, the best advice I think is probably start small. And so what I mean by that is I think a lot of folks have this idea that if they're going to start a small business, they've got to, you know, presumably they have a full-time job today. And so the only way to do it is to quit their full-time job, go rent some brick and mortar space, spend six figures to do the build out, and then go sort of jump all in. And usually the best answer is to not do that. Instead is to, you know, ask yourself, what is the cheapest, quickest, least risky way I can test or validate that this thing I want to do should exist in the world, that there are consumers that want to buy the thing that I want to sell. And so often that looks like a website based e-commerce experience. It frankly looks like having a lot of conversations with potential consumers beforehand. And then it looks like, okay, how do I start this thing as a nights and weekends project, or I start this thing sort of at a smaller scale to sort of de-risk my eventual investment into going sort of full force at this. And that's frankly that how we started our accounting firm. So it was a nights and weekends project that we'd started, you know, sold one client in our first month, sold a couple clients in our next month. And it really took us, you know, 6 or 7 months before we had sort of validated that our unique approach of selling or providing services to our clients was something that we could really build around and scale around. And then we, you know, made the investment to go full time. So starting in sort of small bite-sized increments and de-risking your eventual investment is probably the smartest way to do it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, you know, how they tell you to do. I guess in my experience, it's kind of been like starting a diet. Like they tell you to like mm-hmm. start with small changes. Don't go all in because you're going to burn out.
That's right.
Yep. So, you know, starting with those small steps, I think can obviously lead to. So, okay, so let's stay in the small business lane a little bit and let's talk about. We've started our small business now. We're taking the small steps. You know, maybe we've registered for an LLC or have a cute name, kind of like our podcast, The Town Hall.
Sure.
I'm very proud of it.
It's nice.
Thanks. you know, so now let's talk about some of the challenges that I'm going to face as a small business owner. You know, and let's talk specifically, you know, for Zero, some of the finance challenges or the bookkeeping challenges. You know, what's the best way to find a mentor or an accountant bookkeeper to help me with my finances when I'm starting a small business? Or, you know, how do I even go about that process?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, I'll start broad, which is just sort of how do I find resources that can help my small business? I mean, I think it's important to realize that even though you've likely not been there and done that, you don't have to do it all on your own, right? The idea of carrying all that burden alone is generally a mistake, right? So I think one of the big learnings for us early on was surround ourselves with as many people who have solved challenges that we're currently facing as possible and really lean on them, right? And so, you know, we allocated a large amount of our budget to just having coffees, right? Just taking people out. The reality is people like to help other people. And so reaching out with a genuine and honest ask for folks in your community who've kind of been there, done that, is sort of the first step into kind of surrounding yourself with a group of, you know, eventual mentors. As it relates to, you know, some of the more vertical specific needs, like, you know, legal or let's take accounting, I can certainly speak to that. You know, the one advice I would give to people looking for accountants is not necessarily to find the person that's closest to them in geography, but rather the person who is most capable of helping them solve their unique business challenges and ultimately succeed. I mean, I think that is one of the big learnings with cloud technology in general, is that by implementing technology, firms have sort of eliminated the geographic barrier and can service clients not just in their own hometowns, but in throughout the country, frankly, throughout the world. And so because geographic barriers are now less relevant, sort of vertical and niche segments are more relevant, right? And so, for instance, our firm, we work with B2B venture-backed or venture-backable software startups, which is a very specific niche. However, if you're one of those businesses, we like to think there's not a better choice in the world, regardless of where you live, than to work with us. But now, if you're some other kind of business, we're probably not the best choice, right? So, you know, doing a little bit of search and reaching out to other sort of peers in your industry to find out who are the people that are thus most knowledgeable about your specific business and not just generalists who, you know how to file a tax return. Those are the best resources to turn to.
Absolutely. So, okay. So I've registered my business. I got a cute name. I am creating my mentors and, you know, reaching out and doing a lot of the research. My coworkers actually joke that I should have tattooed maybe on my forehead or on my back or something, because I say it all the time. Your network is your net worth. And I truly, truly believe that the more people that you can talk to, you can steal that. Just, you know, copyright.
There you go. Good. I've already stolen it. I actually just tweeted it, but keep going.
The more people that you can talk to and the more advice that you can get, but you also don't want too many cooks in the kitchen. So you do kind of want to rely on something like Zero to kind of be your one-stop shop, your be-all, end-all in terms of all things bookkeeping. So now let's talk a little bit about, I have my business. I got my mentors, I got my friends. Now I need to make a big decision. And I guess for the sake of the podcast and for the sake of all of this, we're going to say that I started a cookie business.
Yeah.
It's 2:08 and I am starving. So that's all I have on my mind.
Yeah,
so I'm starting a bakery.
Okay.
And I have to make the choice between, is this going to be a brick and mortar? Mm-hmm. Am I going to have a cute, you know, store in downtown Buckhead in Atlanta or maybe in Dayton or wherever, you know?
Yep.
Or yeah, am sure. I going to do, or am I going to do an online small business, kind of like how Baked by Melissa or some of these large, you know, crispy treat businesses have really grown to scale. And that way I'll be able to kind of ship all over the world. So in my, you know, my question is, let's talk a little bit about some of the differences between financing and accounting and advice to brick and mortar and online businesses.
Yeah, no, good question. I mean, it's a good, you know, certainly brick and mortar is better suited to some business just inherently than other kinds of businesses. I mean, that's definitely true. But there's certainly, you know, a trend around e-commerce just generally, which is, you know, ultimately it's easier and easier to buy things online. So certainly like low discretion, low consideration purchases are almost always going to start to happen online versus in store. So the retail or the brick and mortar experience is sort of transitioning to one where just having one alone isn't good enough, right? Ultimately, the brick and mortar needs to live for the purpose of adding an experience or adding some sort of expertise, something that you can't otherwise get online. Otherwise, you're going to make the purchase online, right? So as a, you know, as a small business owner thinking about, you know, building a cookie shop or a bakery or whatever, the question is, how do I create a unique experience that I wouldn't otherwise be able to create from an e-commerce bakery? Or how do I develop, you know, authentic, you know, human connections with my audience. From a financing accounting perspective, obviously the e-commerce route is substantially more capital efficient, way easier to start, certainly easier to scale. And so, you know, again, bakeries are a little challenging. I mean, it's, you know, there is some element of that kind of business that actually just makes it, lends itself better to the in-store kind of experience. But, you know, if I step up a level for a second, you know, generally e-commerce is the best way to test, again, that an idea should live, right? So if I've got this really unique cookie recipe, and for whatever reason it's differentiated or better than the other cookie bakers in the country, the best way for me to get out there and test that this really is a superior product that I can sell is something that probably isn't brick and mortar right away. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to just be e-commerce, right? It could be, you know, an online presence with a wholesale local approach, right? I'm selling through other restaurants or other vendors, but I don't necessarily have the overhead of my own retail store. And start to get a little bit, I mean, A, you can sort of build some awareness, and B, you can start to validate your business before, you know, incurring a 5-year lease and the 6 figures of build out to create that, you know, that brick and mortar storefront, and not even knowing yet if this thing is going to succeed. So generally, if you can, starting e-commerce or at least non brick and mortar to begin is preferable just from a flat out capital efficient perspective.
I also think e-commerce is preferable, A, just because of, you know, it's 2017, it's a world that we live in, it's easier from a social media perspective as well, and a marketing perspective, sure. And there's a lot of free options with that. So you hit on something that I kind of wanted to dig a little bit deeper in, and you used a word, trends. You mm-hmm. said, you know, a trend in e-commerce. So let's talk about some, like, what are some of the trends for small businesses that you've seen this year?
Yeah.
And more importantly, because this will, you know, it's October right now, this will launch in November, and let's talk about some of the trends that you know are forecasting to see being really popular in small businesses and cloud accounting and all that for 2018 as well.
Totally. So, well, a couple trends that are happening now that are sort of tangible. One actually dovetails really well into what we were just talking about, this whole like brick and mortar versus online decision point, let's call it, is the use of crowdfunding, let's say, as a means of product validation instead of just raising money, right?
So, I mean, I get so much money to the most ridiculous products.
Totally.
That I never think are going to get made.
Well, that's right. And you know, we work with a number of startups that have a physical product, and the number one way that they validate the a product before they actually go to the manufacturer at scale is a Kickstarter, right? And what easier way, I mean, with, you know, with a modest amount of investment to build a compelling video and message around a design, you can test if this is the thing to sell or not, right? So that's a really great way that we're seeing folks use, not just for what it was originally intended for, which is I want to raise money, but really more product validation and testing. So that's definitely one trend. I think there's another trend around, and again, this is true specifically of e-commerce, right? As people have, you know, higher proclivity to buy online, but as more people are selling online, right? Just being a cookie store, as a for instance, that sells online, that's a pretty crowded space, right? So we're definitely seeing a narrowing of segments where if you're going to be successful online, having a very specific product offering or value proposition or niche customer that you're going after is becoming more and more important.
So I'm not just selling cookies online. Now I'm selling cookies that are completely customizable from dough to toppings and is made in a sustainable facility and, you know,
totally. Yeah, sustainability,
gluten-free, and vegan, and yada, yada, yada.
Exactly. I was just going to say, yeah, vegan, gluten-free, some amount of, you know, specific dietary requirement. I mean, is a, you know, protein cookies, right? That sort of like CrossFit group that's looking for, you know, anyway. So the idea being specific dietary requirements, whatever that is, really niching down your offerings,
right?
Super important. And then alongside that is, as you think about pricing strategy, a thing that we're seeing that, you know, started with the software world, which is SaaS subscription revenue, right? So moving from episodic one-time sales to recurring revenue sales. We're starting to see that trickle into just traditional retail and CPG products, right? So you've got your Dollar Shave Clubs of the world. You've got – so every sort of category is asking themselves, how do I turn, you know, the episodic sale into the recurring sale?
Right.
And so by doing that – because I think one of the sort of trends that is also true is that it's becoming more and more difficult to reach large audiences at scale. So sort of like the golden age of advertising, where you could buy a TV spot and just hit millions of people is becoming harder and harder to do, right? Interruptive advertising is becoming much less prominent. And so the way to reach customers today is building authentic connections with your consumers on social media or using useful content. And so, you know, you're having to invest more in each individual customer. And so then the question is, well, how do I convert that customer to a large lifetime value, right? And the way to do that is to lock them into some sort of subscription revenue pricing model. And so we're seeing retailers and product companies do that with in pretty much every vertical of any kind.
So now creating like a dessert box that has my vegan protein cookies delivered to your door.
That's exactly
twice
right.
Twice a month in a cute packaging with dry ice, and you know, I'm taking the hassle out of dessert for you. Okay.
Yep. That's exactly right. And then even if I'm a retailer and I sell through on Amazon or, gosh, even in a grocery store, you're seeing things like subscribe and save on Amazon or add to cart or add to click list. Kroger's a retailer of us in Southwest Ohio, and their online ordering is called click list. And so really that's quasi-subscription revenue, right? Once you sort of on Amazon click subscribe and save, now I've got a subscription of that product. Or once I get into the sort of online basket of that retailer, it's likely that I'm going to stay in that basket, right? So that's
my
even
entire life
a sort of synthetic subscription. Yeah, it's interesting. But so it's just a total shift of pretty much every industry.
My entire life completely changed the day that I figured out what Instacart was and figured out online ordering for Kroger. And I feel bad because now I, you know, don't ask how the Paulette, the woman at my Kroger, how her grandkids are all the time. But I also can sit on my lazy butt and order all my groceries. So, you know, and I know that the same amount of groceries, the same stuff is going to come at the same time every week. And I think that, you know, a part of me is a champion for the little guy. Obviously, we're talking about small businesses and mom and pops. But you, right. There's got to be something said for the sheer convenience of our lives now due to so many of these trends.
Well, that's totally right. And I mean, to be fair to the small guys, right, I mean, there's also a sort of broader trend just, I mean, this has been happening for a while. It's not necessarily a 2017 trend, but away from sort of the big box retailers towards local boutique curated experiences. And frankly, that's sort of, you know, you look at, you know, I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, and you look at a Procter & Gamble, right, who's been a large CPG, successful for many, many, many decades, but you're seeing large CPG companies now starting to take it on the chin and hemorrhage a bit of market share to these startup, boutique, subscription-based CPG retailers like, you know, take Dollar Shave Club or, you know, other sort of products like that.
Yeah.
And it's because they're able to create these authentic one-to-one connections. But all that to say, because we're all moving to this subscription lifestyle, whether it's your example of your click list or it's something online, getting one of those sales is becoming more and more valuable, which means the competition for each consumer is becoming hotter and hotter. And so it's, you have to invest more to win a customer. But if you're able to get subscription revenue out of it, they're worth more in return. So anyways, interesting trend with how we just buy things, frankly.
Yeah.
That affects small businesses and large businesses alike.
Yeah, I think that it just says about kind of the whole trajectory of where we're headed as a society.
Right.
It's really interesting. You know, my grandma, she's 83, and, you know, she FaceTimes me every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to think of kind of the evolution of the phone from when she was little to, you know, the fact that her and I can be in different states and see each other every day is wild. And it's crazy to think where we're going to be in terms of retail, you know, small businesses in the next 10, 15 years. It really is crazy.
Yeah, that's totally true. And I guess the one thing I would add on to that is I think about 2018 trends, right? This is a thing that I personally am talking about at conferences and whoever will listen, frankly, quite a bit, which
we
is
will.
Kind of the impact that AI and machine learning is already having and will continue to have on both, you know, physical product and retail experiences, as well as particularly service-based industries, right? And so this idea that, you know, anybody who is providing some amount of commodity service or sort of transaction processing, any kind of like task that's replicable, obviously those sorts of things are susceptible to, you know, having a really nice machine learning algorithm just replace that entirely, right? People are talking about entire industries that are potentially at risk of replacement by, you know, AI. And one of those industries is accounting, right? People, you read an article every week where people are saying, hey, accounting is obsolete and it's, you know, it's going to be replaced by machines. And while I don't believe that's true of accounting or frankly of any industry entirely, I do think though the focus is shifting away from the kinds of services that I can provide that are sort of transaction oriented and replicable, and how do I, those sorts of things will be automated. So frankly, what can be automated will be automated. However, what machines are very bad at doing and what humans are very good at doing is providing creative thinking on top of these transaction processes.
Right.
So I think every industry is going to have to ask themselves, what additional value add can we provide to our customers that are highly tailored, highly customized, that has real value to their lives above and beyond the traditional just service that we're providing? Because ultimately, those are the things that are going to sort of retain customers. And everything else, like I said, that can be automated certainly will be. So AI, machine learning, I don't know that that will have a world-beating impact on industries in 2018. But I'd say 2018 is certainly the year that everybody has to ask themselves, everything from truck driving down to, like I said, accounting, what are the things that, what are the creative elements that truly make us indispensable to our customers? And how do we double down and reorganize around those things? So we're sort of future-proofed against, you know, automation.
Yeah, I think that automation, like, it gets such a bad rep for, you know, taking away jobs, but I actually think that it's going to enhance a lot of the processes that we have now and make people, like you said, think creatively and provide more value, for sure.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the reality is, I believe that it's going to have a very positive impact on pretty much every industry, including accounting. Like, as a for instance, you know, let's say 5 years ago, I think you mentioned this at the top of the podcast, right? Bookkeeping was a very, you know, what bookkeeping looked like was I get, you know, manual receipts and I get paper bank statements and I spend 8 hours physically keying those into some piece of desktop software. And then at the end of that, I churn out, you know, a bank statement and a P&L. And frankly, that's all I can do because I'm already 8 hours into this, you know, this monthly engagement, and that's already expensive enough. And so, my client can't afford to pay me to do any more than that. But I've not added any value, right? So if we can move to a world in which machines can do most of what I just described, and now my 8 hours can be devoted wholly to understanding the economics of the business and the strategy of the owners. What do they really want to get out of their business over the next 3, 5, 7, 10 years, and work with them to help them make those decisions and understand their growth levers? Well, now I can actually add value, and I can do it for the same price point that I used to do, because all the sort of commodity stuff is being taken care of for me. And I think if we all look at our industries in that light, I think we all have the ability to benefit from automation and not be harmed by it. But it is certainly a shift.
Yeah, it's like having the best intern of all time.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, very cheap, very efficient intern. I mean, who doesn't want that? I'm in.
It sounds great to me.
That's great.
So I want to transition a little bit. Like I said, this podcast is launching November 1st as a big part of our launch of our new resources marketplace. And another big project for us is Small Business Saturday, which, you know, comes after Thanksgiving and before Christmas and with Black Friday. There's just a lot of holidays coming down the pipe for us. Mm-hmm. And you never really think about how holidays affect retail other than what you see on TV, where they're all like pulling their hair out and like going to, you know, pass out at the end of the day on Black Friday. But, you know, how do you think that holidays affect, but like, some, yeah, I guess in terms of trends, we can talk, yeah, online, brick and mortar, Small Business Saturday, but what do the holidays look like? Are they really like large spikes? Is there a certain time of the year where everything calms down? What's kind of the seasonality of a small, yeah, business?
Well, I mean, so for starters, obviously that depends quite a bit on the type of business, right? But I would say to some degree, every business is impacted by the holidays, right? Whether you are a retailer or a manufacturer of goods that consumers buy, or you're a business that services companies that are retailers or manufacturers that people want to buy, right? Everybody's impacted. So, I mean, a couple things that are happening. So obviously e-commerce is, you know, without question dominating. Every year it captures a larger and larger share of the holiday spend. No question that's going to continue in 2017. One of the things that that is doing, though, is it's, you know, I think there is some amount of like Black Friday fatigue, and there are more opportunities to reach buyers throughout the holiday cycle and not just on that one day. So I do think we're starting to see that spike smooth out a little bit over, over that period. And frankly, I think that's a good trend for the small boutiques and the small manufacturers. I think there's definitely a trend away from only shopping at big box retailers. I think those folks are going to continue to see market share decline, and folks are looking for more unique, authentic, curated experiences and gifts. You're going to see that continue to increase. And then as far as just like the timing and seasonality, I mean, again, on the retail side, certainly that's where a lot of sales continue to occur, and that will obviously continue. I think for sort of the B2B side, it's the holidays really mean more of just thoughtful planning, right? So certainly, it's a drive season in even B2B software sales, right? But keeping in mind that in addition to high demand, there's also how do I describe it? Low supply of their time. All that to say, there's Thanksgiving, which is almost a dead week. And then right around, you know, the 2 weeks that surround Christmas and New Year's are also kind of a dead week. So you've got folks that are trying to cram a larger than average amount of sales in a smaller than average period of time. And so, A, obviously that's pretty crazy, but B, it just requires some careful planning and organization to make certain that you're coordinating with your buyers or customers to make those things happen.
Right.
Anyways, certainly nothing beyond those for this year.
For small businesses, yeah. So yeah. My cookie business, now we've made it through the holidays. We're trying to project next year. or trying to, you know, get everything going for the next year. What advice do you have for me for financially planning ahead? What does that cycle kind of look like?
Good question. Wait, lost my headphones here. So as far as financial planning ahead, I mean, certainly this is the time of the year to do that, right? So we're actually, you know, November is obviously starting to get kind of crazy, but I mean, this is the time of the year to kind of be introspective about the things that have succeeded and failed. Certainly it's important to get somebody. I mean, so I'll kind of go back to the advice around getting a small team, let's say, of mentors, advisors, like an accountant and a lawyer, who have a lot of expertise around your industry, who not only have seen, you know, have their 10,000 hours in your specific area, but are also observing data points in the moment that can kind of speak to you about trends that they're seeing around similar businesses to yours. So really, again, just being introspective about, you know, the things that you've learned over the past year, and engaging these professionals to help plan out your, you know, your projections for 12 months and 24 months down the road. This is also a great time, you know, to be talking from a tax planning perspective. So something that we haven't really talked about is the compliance side of this, the tax side of this. Right. So, you know, a lot of people like to think about tax season, April, as being the time of the year where, you know, I can get, say, an accountant who can come and do a bunch of financial wizardry and really reduce my tax liability. But the reality is, once the year is over, there's really not a lot that you can do to change your tax liability for the period that's already over, right? But you can do some thoughtful planning around the future, the following year to come. And these areas are around things like how you're organized. So perhaps organizing as an S-corp is a good solution for you and can help reduce your tax liability. Retirement planning is one area where business owners can defer quite a bit of tax liability into the future. So engaging professionals at the beginning of the year, particularly January, is a time to have really good thoughtful conversations with tax accountants before they get super busy around April and the March and April deadlines. So I'd say those two things are suggestions I would have for folks as they're thinking about, you know, 2018 and beyond.
Ryan, thank you so much. There's so many takeaways from this that, you know, you're going to be able to look back on our blog, and we're going to have, you know, Ryan's podcast embedded, as well as having, you know, his five main points. And I really think that a lot of the stuff that you said today kind of will resonate with not only just the small business owners, but anyone that's thinking, you know, how do I start a business and where do I start? So before I let you go, I want to ask you three more questions. These are my big three.
Oh, boy.
First thing that comes to mind, just let it go. Ready? Ryan, what did you have for breakfast today?
I had a homemade egg McMuffin.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
I have that every day. It's delicious.
A homemade egg McMuffin? You make it yourself?
Yeah. We're featured. Well, my wife and I, we collaborate on it, but yes, it's homemade. Yep.
Oh, that's so nice. A little duet.
That's right.
Number two, if any actor, dead or alive, could play you in the movie of your life, who would play you and why?
Boy, that's a good question. I would say, but the first thing that came to mind was Ben Stiller. And the only reason I say that, first of all, he's a funny guy and I like that, but I am constantly compared to him in the way that we look. So I think that's probably, just for aesthetic accuracy, I think it's Ben Stiller.
Okay, good to know. And lastly, if you could play a professional sport for any team and any sport, what would it be and why?
Well, I don't, you know, so it's a good question. It wouldn't actually be for a team. I think I would play professional golf. And the reason I say, well, I have two reasons. One, I certainly love being outside. And two, I'm terrible at golf, and I play it enough to be frustrated by being terrible. So I like the idea of being suddenly much better at it.
That's my answer. I am so bad, but I want to be so good.
It's just the most frustrating sport in the world. If I could just erase that frustration from my life, I'd tell you.
My therapist thinks that that's not a stress reliever for me. It's a stress inducer.
That's definitely true for me too. I have actually come to the realization of that. Like I've decided, you know what? That's not how I unwind anymore.
That's so funny. Ryan, thank you so much again for calling in, helping us out.
Of course.
You guys, you can check out Ryan. Do you want to plug anything? Anything, your social media? Do you want people to check you out on LinkedIn if anybody has any questions?
Yeah.
I know that they can go to Xero, but certainly, plug away.
Yeah, certainly. Well, obviously, if you want to learn more about Xero as a product, visit the website, xero.com. Absolutely. Accept LinkedIn connections, so linkedin.com/RonKWatson. Follow me on Twitter at RonKWatson. And certainly for those folks that find themselves in the sort of B2B SaaS venture backable space or digital agencies, you can check out our accounting firm's website at upsourcedaccounting.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Amy.